like to begin speaking with you by asking you for anything about the Soderbergh thing.
What
sort of Soderbergh Clooney acting thing?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm sorry for blanking on it as I sit here.
It's called Unscripted.
That was the most fantastic. I just love that.
Yeah, I do too.
I wish it just would keep going on, seriously, like The Sopranos.
Me too. Me too. I thought it was wonderful. I loved doing it. I liked the idea of getting up in the morning and having no idea what I was going to say, and not having to learn lines, and not having to be concerned with script, but to come in and have George say, talk about this today, or I'm going to send somebody into the room, and she's going to feel this way, and see where it goes. And we did hours and hours and hours, hundreds of hours of it. I think it was a very good show. It should have stayed on the air.
The cutting is just, I just felt that, especially about the dialogue didn't quite ever seem to be on the nose, but it was cut so well that it was always one made you want more from the scene, which is the secret of really good.
Yeah, I think so too. And it was completely unscripted. I never knew what I was going to say, and I never censored myself. And all those classes happened as exactly as you saw them, and hours more, actually, of stuff. I've never seen it all the way through.
What was the reasoning? They just felt not enough people, they didn't want to build it?
Sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. Hello? Who?
Sorry. The first shot in starting out in the evening is of yourself, your character, not writing on a computer, but on a IBS electric. Yes. Right away, saying this man does not have that much of a driving interest in being.
Wasn't even an electric typewriter, it was a hand typewriter.
Yeah, okay. Right away, that is the thing. So right away you feel, well, gee, what's the, you know, and then there's the conservative manner, the tie always, and the posture. It's all very much of a piece, obviously, that you, and the, you know, so you're then, I guess, kind of primed, if because we've seen May December Romance before, that some kind of loosening up, loosening of the tie, a knotting of the tie, you know, and it kind of happens, but the integrity of it, which is what I finally liked about it, is that it doesn't do that conventional thing. That was my reaction.
Well, it's not a May-December story at all. That is a tiny, tiny little piece of it, but the romance in it is minor, I think. Related to other things, and he never does really, he never ever does actually loosen his tongue, metaphorically maybe, but for a moment. But it's about something, for me, it's about something far deeper than young girl, older man.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's about a man who's who lives a lifestyle and a code of ethics rare nowadays, rare both in behavior and in numbers, who I think is probably at some point in his life shut down unknowingly. Didn't think he was shutting down, as so many people do. You know, you wake up one day and you look at your life and you go, I've been in this pattern now for so many years, and I take this pattern for granted as if this is what my life is supposed to be, when in fact your life can be anything you want it to be. And this character made a choice. And she comes along and says, you had great, great talent as a young man, and then you floated away and disappeared. Why? And he doesn't like the question. He resists it, resists and resists and resists. And then finally she gets to him on a lot of levels and wakes him up. And I think the movie's stunningly profoundly beautiful in ways I hadn't anticipated, because we only had 20 days to do it, and we had no money to do it, and I think Andrew just pulled it off beautifully.
20 days, that means, did you...
We shot for 18 days. 18 days shooting.
Didn't you... Was part of the deal for you to rehearse and block intensely before the actual principal?
We never blocked anything until we got to the set. But what Andrew and I did was work intensely together for a full month prior to shooting, because I said to him, we're not going to have a moment on that set to debate something. Like, what does this mean? What is the character? So we kind of sketched in what we believe Leonard's through line would be before I got on, so that when I got there, both of us knew what we were aiming for. We could spend time with the actresses and the other characters, getting as Leonard was in most of it. And then I went away from it. You know, I went to England for a long, long time to do the play. I just finished about Frost Nixon. And I remember being in my dressing room at the Gielgud Theatre last October, maybe a year ago. And my cell phone rang, and it was Andrew, and just in buckets of bliss, saying the film has been accepted at Sundance. And I was gobsmacked, as they say in England, because I didn't think the film would find any kind of a major venue. And it is day by day growing in its reputation. And last night I did a screening for it at Variety, and people are just beside themselves with pleasure. It's nice.
Who was your interviewer at the Variety screening series?
Tim Gray.
I love going to those.
I do too.
A good film always feels much enhanced when you've got a good audience, like a good play.
I think so.
Yeah, you always get good people at that group.
I think so, and the quality of the questions is always good, and you always feel if you're in something you're proud of, that you've come out of it better, that you're preaching to the converted in a way. People are there and really, and you can tell by the amount of people who stay or don't stay.
Yeah. I was delighted the very instant you walked out on stage in Frost Nixon. I saw that for how many months ago was that?
You see it in New York or London?
Spring, I guess.
Yeah, we closed August 19th.
The walk. The awkward walk was just, I thought, perfect. I've never seen Richard Nixon walk, but I thought that was just immediately beautiful.
Thanks. Thank you.
You must have, I mean, did you ever see footage of him?
Yes, I did, but I never imitated him. I don't walk that way. But I felt that way when I was playing him. And the walk happened, I didn't think about it. It just began to evolve over a period of months, that he walked kind of splayed and slightly awkwardly.
There was a writer. Was it Theodore H. White in Making the President? Was it Norman Mailer in the Miami and the Seizure? But somebody described it as being so profoundly out of touch with his body that he...
He was actually incapable of putting a pen back in its holder. You know, when the president signs the bills and then he hands the pens to the senators who made the bill, and the pen becomes a souvenir for them. President Nixon wasn't able to sign it, put the pen back in the holder. So what they worked out was that an aide would stand next to him with the holder. The president would sign, hand the pen, the man would put it in the holder, hand it to the senator.
Physical coordination.
Yeah.
I was amazed. I've been hearing all along, prior to your being cast as Richard Nixon in the Ron Howard version of the piece, that Warren Beatty was going to be the guy. That was the going.
I heard the same thing.
And I was, as much as I love him and everything he's done, I couldn't imagine it. And I thought, well, gee, I was so relieved and delighted. When they finally came to their senses.
Thank you.
Can you tell me if there was a story on that? Or were they, in fact, looking?
Well, the story is true. I think when Ron first saw it in California, in London, he was extremely complimentary to me. But I didn't think I would play it, because I know the game. And I know he needed a great deal of money, studio money, to do it, or wanted to have a great big budget. And that would mean he wanted to have a big international movie star. So they batted lots of people around. Jack Nicholson was there for a while. Warren was there. I can't remember all the others. I don't want to speak out of turn. I don't know who else was involved or who may have made a pitch for it or who may have been considered and rejected. But certainly when he finally did ask me to play it, I had assumed long before the day he called that it was going to be Warren, because that's what I'd heard. So they obviously came to some sort of impasse, and Warren is not playing.
Between my journalist friends, we were all sort of talking about this at one point, and you always go with the person who has it, the handle on it, the best, and you make them the star. They are the star because they do it as well. Yeah. So well. So
that's doesn't work that way. But
doesn't work that way.
No, look, I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out in terms of actual records, but I think I may be the only actor who's ever repeated a Broadway success in films twice. I did it with Dracula and with Ross Nixon, and we keep coming up with people who've done it once, but we can't come up with anybody who's ever had two Broadway successes that he or she able to transfer to films. And as a matter of fact, most people don't get to do it once. I know Robert Preston did once, but for the most part, the part goes to someone that they feel will sell tickets in, across the seas as well.
Mm-hmm. I have to tell you the story. I was at when I was just starting out in journalism. It was when I saw Dracula at the Magno screening room on 55th and 6th.
Yeah,
it was called Magno. This is the true story. Up my left leg, about 2/3 of the way in, a mouse literally went up my left leg. It's true. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what is that? And I, felt the sensation. I slapped it, and it came down, and I threw it against the wall, and I was like, jittering in shock. But I thought, Dracula, the whole thing.
That's extraordinary. That's extraordinary.
Well, that story for years.
It's a shame that Renfield didn't then appear behind you and grab it and eat it.
I'm a Wiltonian. I went to Wilton High School.
Oh, yes.
And you were there for how many years?
I had a house in Wilton from, 1971 to 1977, in that time frame. Yeah. I sold it, actually, just the season I opened Dracula, just because I'd gotten married that year, too, so I sold it. It was my bachelor house, and my new wife didn't want me to have it anymore.
Okay. So you've been pretty much a Manhattanite all your life, except for that brief...
I've been all over. I've lived all over the world. I've had an apartment in New York, a different apartment in New York since 1960. I've always had somewhere in Manhattan. But it's my city. It's my home.
Reading, hearing people, seeing you on the street. And you're in Midtown?
No, on the Upper West Side. It's sort of an actor enclave up there, too. You run into actors in the park and on Columbus and Amsterdam and Riverside Park. Lots of actors live in the Upper West Side of New York.
Was Frost Nixon, I spoke to Ron Howard briefly when he was doing a presentation of the Moon film, and talked about the one about In the Shadow of the Moon. Officially presented. And he was, part of it was shot in the actual San Clemente area, where they
did we actually shot, when you see the film and you see me come out of the door and get into a car to drive off to the interviews, I'm actually driving through Nixon's own driveway from his own front door.
Okay. And some soundstage work, right? Yeah.
A lot of soundstage work. All the interviews are on a soundstage, and my office within the house, those are all sound stages, but the exteriors are actually at San Clemente and Yorba Linda, where the library is. And when I walk up the steps of the helicopter to make that final sign, that's the actual helicopter Nixon climbed up, and the actual steps. Yes. Same.
I had this idea that they wanted it to be a very smallish, lean film, and not trying to, overproduce it.
Yeah, it is. I think it is, and very much. There weren't. I thought that every location and every added scene was absolutely right and endemic to the property. There wasn't any, there wasn't some major, huge ballroom scene or some gigantic airplane, you know, military stuff. It was all things that were essential to the unfolding of the character's inner life. And all of the things that were done, even that would have an air of production value, they were small. You know, there weren't 50, you know, thousands of people. There were a couple of hundred people when I was talking in a ballroom, and when I got on the plane, there weren't thousands of extras. I think he did it beautifully, just beautifully. I hope it's a wonderful film. It felt extraordinarily, extraordinarily right when we were doing it, but that is not always an indication. You really don't know until the lights go down and an audience sees it for the first time. It's like a play. You just don't. You don't know what you have until you tell us.
Has there been an instance in your career when you've just, you say now, of course, the wisdom of your years, that you don't know, but have you ever felt that this has to work and then it turned out that...
Yeah, I did a film many years ago called 1492, The Conquest of Paradise, that Ridley Scott directed, that I thought, this is the Lawrence of Arabia of the 80s, or the, I guess we shot it in the late 80s, early 90s, I don't remember.
Marlon Brando?
No, Gerard Depardieu. About Columbus.
Right.
And every day I thought this is going to be the great epic film, and it just died a death. So you don't really know.
Did that come out second or after the other one or before?
No, the other one, I think they were concurrent, and the other one was with a Canadian actor whose name I can't remember, a French-Canadian actor. Marlon Brando was in that one. But they were both unsuccessful.
What's the next thing for you? You must have gotten a huge bounce out of the Foss Nixon thing and people having...
I'm starting a movie on Monday called The Box, which is... with Cameron Diaz, which is being directed by Rich Kelly, a really, truly great script.
I know him pretty well.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, I like him so much, yeah.
Based on Richard Matheson?
Based on Richard Matheson's short story called Button Button.
And was that on the old Twilight Zone or the newish one?
I think it was on the old one, because Richard Matheson is now 80, and I think he wrote this a long, long time ago. And it's a wonderful company. It's Cameron and James Marsden and myself, and they're now beginning to cast the other parts. But it's a great, great part, and a wonderful script, and a whole other genre, you know, and that kind of wonderful horror thriller genre.
And the premise, I'll just describe it briefly, is that a young woman is given the opportunity to profoundly change her life and her husband's life, but the price, as she understands, that someone is going to pay for it.
With their life.
With their life, yeah.
That's exactly, very well put. That's what a writer would do. Yeah.
And it was a half hour thing in the Twilight Zone.
I think so. I never saw the original.
Are you the person that...
I'm Arlington Stewart, who's the man who comes with the box. Wonderful character name, isn't it? Arlington Stewart, which Rich made up. I love it. Mm. Yeah, it's a very exciting project. Couldn't be more different than Starting Out in the Evening or Frost Nixon or the film I just did this summer called On the Hook, which I did with Elliot Gould, which is a sort of espionage film. So I've got four wonderful projects.
That hasn't come out, has it? On the Hook?
No, they're just about to submit it to Sundance this year.
Oh, great.
We'll see what happens.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope it's good. I'll be there.
Good.
You're there, we can say hello again.
Okay. I won't be there because I'll be shooting the box, but it may not get accepted. You never know. Anyway, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure.